Indeed, Greg, many very obvious connections between the three pieces, most notably unique between the Strauss and the piece that you're about to play, which one quotes the other.
Yes, it's always fascinated me how little we actually combine those two in concert, where actually it helps inform both pieces' history. And I know one reason, I think, why it's never really combined in concert is that probably opening a concert with a Metamorphosen is very, very difficult and sets a certain kind of mood, which is difficult. But then I believe with the Shostakovich, we found a missing link. And when people will hear now, in a few minutes, the original second movement, how it was planned by Beethoven to be in remembrance of something, but how such a great work of art becomes, in its turn, something so important that it is the subject of a remembrance of a different kind, or to be even broader in the approach, and which I believe, the representative of European civilization, which had disappeared in World War II. I mean, this is how the art we're practicing is so wonderful and rich in all these historical connections, and this is why it helps us, I believe, remembering where we're from and where we're going, and it's a never-ending process.
Your connections with this particular Beethoven symphony are interesting. You recorded it early on in your Rotterdam career, not something you were massively satisfied with, I'm thinking.
Well, that's also an interesting question, being satisfied or not about an interpretation or recording. Because, of course, as soon as something is done, you want to do it better. I believe that this Eroica that we can hear on recording is a real photograph of who I was at the time and what I was trying to achieve with the Eroica. I believe that what we're about to hear is conceptually not different.
Really?
It's just more
practiced.
Yeah, and probably...
You did it at Mostly Mozart last year, and people said it was a life-changing event. People walked out of that performance and said, I'll be telling my grandchildren about that. So that's a big old leap, right?
That was a big leap, and I believe that with these pieces, there's a seed you're planting at the very beginning of your life when you first do it, and hopefully, when I'm 80 or 90, I will get even more to the essence of the growth of the beautiful tree or plant or flower, whatever, that was planted like a seed when I was in my 20s. But in order to do so, you have to do it very often. And also, the connection, the combination between my vision and every group makes the color a little bit different. When I did it in New York City 2 years ago with the Chamber Orchestra of Europe, obviously the sound will be very different with Philadelphia. I'm not trying to take away the beautiful sound of the strings or the darkness or the kind of phrasing of the woodwinds, but I'm still trying to have the same approach in the inner details and same approach about the revolutionary aspect of this symphony. I told the people right from the start of the first rehearsal this week, I said to the orchestra, you've played this every year for the past few years. I play it every
past
year.
Past 120 years.
Yeah, most likely. And the most important thing and most difficult thing to achieve is that we have to bring it fresh, because Beethoven, of all composers, wanted people to be unsettled by his music. And it's so difficult to be unsettled now because we know it so well. But there are some ways, going back to the score and exploring this tiny detail or not, or putting the spotlight on one detail instead of the other. And that's what I'm trying to do. And I have to say that the orchestra has reacted extremely willingly in that. So hopefully, maybe it will still be another life-changing experience for those who will be there.
But where is the evolution happening then for you? It's not happening between the rehearsal and the concert. It's not happening in between, if you're doing three or four performances, because you have to have a certain consistency so the orchestra know what you're about. Is it happening that you wake up one morning and go, ah, or you look at the score and you say, ah? I mean, where does it happen? Or does it happen in a performance that you say the next time or the next group I do this with will be...
All of these answers.
No, oh, really? Oh.
Absolutely. It's all true. First, maybe our listeners will be happy to know that the way I conceive a week especially here in Philadelphia, because it's my orchestra. But even when I'm a guest, I'm thinking this way. There's a trajectory that starts with 10:30 a.m., the first rehearsal, which is usually on the Tuesday, and that finishes when we do our last performance on Sunday. There should be a trajectory there.
Ah.
The first concert, of course, critics go to the first concert, but it's not a finished thing. It's normal that by the fourth, which is still not a finished thing in absolute, but there has been an evolution. I think we need to use four concerts. It might be interesting if someone would come, let's say you would come to one program and attend each of the four concerts, see how it evolves and grows and lives. That's very important to me. Therefore, with that same vision, the next time I'm doing a piece, of course, it becomes different because I'm looking at the score. I can also very often, the Eroica this time, I ditched my old score because it was so heavily marked. And it was great because then I could see details I had not seen before. Our principal second violin, our wonderful Kim Fisher, showed me also one bar with a different length at some point, which I never noticed. And it's a very collaborative process. And the most significant evolution, obviously, is by letting it rest for some time,
yeah,
playing something else, and then coming back to it fresh 1 or 2 years later.
Almost like sleeping on it.
Yeah, that's precisely it. And I think that just continues to evolve somewhere at the back of our mind, subconsciously.
And then when you come back to it, do you ever surprise yourself? Or do you want to be surprised by yourself?
Of course I'm surprised, usually on the negative thing, which is like, why haven't I thought of this before? Simon Rattle did this sometimes. We do this all the time. Simon was very sweet when I made my debut in the Berlin Philharmonic with the Symphonie Fantastique. Simon attended the performance, and backstage he couldn't stop saying, oh, what you did in that bar, I wish I'd have thought of that. Now I need to copy you. You know, we're always this way because we need, whether it's because listening to someone else or listening to us, we wish we would have understood it. But I've decided, and that's back to a previous question of yours about, am I satisfied with a previous recording? Well, no, but I've decided never to be a renegade, you know, of whatever I did before, because that's part of
my... That was who you were.
Exactly. And it doesn't help saying, oh, that was bad. I often make the jokes in rehearsals, say, yeah, last year I asked you to play this long, now play this short. You know, last year I was young, now I know. And so, but, you know, it's only jokingly. I think it's all part of understanding that these pieces, especially when we talk about the Eroica, are so vast and profound and have so many layers that we don't have enough of a lifetime to explore them. And that's why we're still playing them, by the way. It's because even 400 years, 500 years, and in 1,000 years' time, we will not have extracted all the juice from it. Every performance is only one angle of one of these great masterpieces.
Well, an angle is waiting for you on the stage of Risenhall. We've taken up enough of your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you, as always.